I'm Wall.
Informalities aside, we are going to go ahead and start our meeting. And so,
can you say the date?
Okay. And so, before we begin, I want to remind you that this meeting is being audio recorded. So Zoom is not being recorded, but we are recording on audio. And today's date is Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. As the Park Family Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board, and I hope that I'm saying it wrong, but may the fourth be with you. And first on our agenda, is there any community input? Hearing none.
Or announcements that anybody would like to make?
I just wanted to say that if you right-click on any photo, especially those that are in the room with Trish right now, you can hit fit to frame if you're not seeing everyone. And so that is one little thing I wanted to mention before we get started today.
Okay, Darla.
Darla, I just wanted to share that we're having a follow-up to our diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation that we had on the 27th with Adina. I'm not even going to attempt your last name because I won't say it appropriately. On May the 25th at 6 o'clock in the evening, and we would love for you all to come and join us. I can send the link to Trish for the meeting that we had at the end of April, and then this new conversation or follow-up conversation at the end of May is really just going to be kind of a question and answer, kind of more low-key, not a big formal presentation, but any of you that were there know that she is just a phenomenal presenter and a wealth of information. Thank you.
Okay, Darla. So follow-up, is it going to be an in-person meeting or is it Zoom? And if you didn't attend her initial training, would it be beneficial to attend the Q&A?
So it's an online Zoom meeting. And if you didn't, I always think she's beneficial. I learn from her every time I hear her present. But we also have a link to the first meeting if you would like to go through that as well. So, I would say that's just a personal choice. I'll send the link out to Trish. You can share it.
Thank you, Darla. Is there any other announcements or input? Hearing none. So our first formal agenda item is Community in Motion, and Michael Kelly, you are here. I thought I saw you a little while ago. And Gary are here to present.
Here. I think it's just me. Our executive director, Jeanne Ann, I think may have been attending too, but she's on vacation this week, so it sounds like it's just me. Do you have the slide deck?
I can pull it up and share for you if you like.
Perfect, because I think Jeanne sent it to someone.
Yes, just one moment.
This is our first time presenting in this room, and so there's a little bit of a learning curve going on, but we're gonna do this and hopefully be able to continue doing that hybrid format for our meeting. So bear with us here.
My name is Michael Kelly, and I am the Transportation Services Manager here at Community in Motion. So I have a little bit of a short slide deck for you. Just a short overview before we get into all of the programs. We refocused our formerly we were Human Services Council, and around 2019 we refocused to solely provide transportation. We are previously doing some volunteer programs and transportation programs. Refocused solely into transportation, launched a volunteer driver program, and then early 2020 we had started a bit of a name change and rebranding, and COVID severely delayed that. We didn't end up launching the new name and logo and branding until mid-2021. Our new mission statement on the slide there for you is to connect our neighbors with access to reliable transportation to support healthy and independent living. Next slide. Our first and largest program is the program I have, is our non-emergency medical transportation program. And this program is funded through Washington Medicaid, also known as Healthcare Authority or Washington Apple Health. The next slide. And our service area covers five counties along the Columbia River, starting with Mukiakum, Cowlitz, Clark, Skamania, and Klickitat counties. And we are providing transportation to Medicaid-eligible clients who are accessing covered services, primarily within their local communities, have some ability to provide some transportation outside the local community, require some additional paperwork usually. Our trips are done by gas vouchers, bus passes, mileage reimbursement, volunteer drivers, and then we contract with a number of taxi companies that also have wheelchair accessible vans. Our scheduled transportation clients typically need to call with at least 2 working days notice, and we book trips out 14 days in advance. We also accept requests via fax. And next slide. I covered everything. We have seen an increase in out-of-state trips in those lanes. We do by plane for the occasional plane trip. When callers call in, it's really helpful for them to have their name and date of birth, a complete pickup address, any information on their mobility or any mobility aids they're using, the complete name, address, or phone number for their medical provider, the time of appointment, the type of medical service they're having, and the return time. And this is going to be pretty consistent throughout most of the programs that we operate. Medicaid one is a bit more detailed because it does have some state requirements that we have to report for. Next slide. Next one we have is mobility management. We have a mobility manager. He is serves primarily or only in Clark County, And the focus for that program is to increase transportation for seniors and people with disabilities. Next slide. And they do that by, he does that by working with different community organizations and local governments. And those are places like Clark County Bike and Ped Advisory Committee, C-Trans Citizen Advisory Committee. Community in Motion also operates an Accessible Transportation Coalition, a group of transportation folks that get together and try to solve all the county's transportation problems. One of the local, or one of the programs that our mobility manager helps kind of drive forward is a service that I'll talk about later on in the presentation. He was able to secure some funding for planning and then launching a North County shuttle service from Clark County to get people into Battleground. We'll discuss a little bit more of that later. This is funded through some 5310 funds, I think it's for C-Trans. Next slide. The Trip Resource Center is a website that we operate. It also has a phone number if someone's not able to access our website or needs help. It's really just a website that has a bunch of different transportation services and contact information on how to access those. And it's done by people going to the website. They enter in a start and end date, start and end location, I'm sorry, and then click on a couple of different demographics, whether they are a veteran or have Medicaid or a senior, several others. Hit plan trip, and it will give you a list of transportation options, and that covers the five counties that we cover for Washington Medicaid, Clark, Kalispell, Escambia, and Kiakum, and then also includes information for Grays Harbor, Lewis, and Pacific counties. Although the counties out near the coast, the phone number goes not to our mobility manager, goes to a mobility manager that's out in the Kalispell-Kiakum area. Next slide. Mobility coordinator helped about 1,000 people, did a bunch of different outreach events. Next slide. All right, the North County Shuttle Service, this is the one I was talking about before. Our mobility manager secured some planning and then some grant additional funding to launch the program. Unfortunately, the plan started pre-COVID, and then the launch happened during COVID, so it didn't quite launch exactly the way it was planned. Next slide. But this is a shuttle service with different areas for North Clark County, and based on the area that a person lives in, they can catch a shuttle service or book a shuttle ride into Battleground to access appointments, shopping centers, meal sites, and a host of other social services while they're there. This one does require a couple of days notice, two business days, and they are booking trips out 30 days in advance. Requires the same pickup and drop off and address information as the other programs. Next slide. Volunteers in Motion is our in-house volunteer driver program. Next slide. This program is for Clark County only, primarily for people over 65 or have a disability. And this one's a pretty fun one because we're able to do transportation to things more than just medical appointments and other things like that. We can do trips for social events or shopping or see someone to the movies or the salon. This one is the same. It does require the 2 days noted. Trips are booked out 30 days in advance. The way the program works is they call in and give the specialist the information, and then once they've located the driver, the person will get a phone call back with their driver's name and when to be ready for their appointment. The other plan for this program is to help with on-the-job training for drivers or other contracted vendors, as well as being interested in potentially driving for C-Trans. Next slide. So Reserve Ride Transportation is a transportation program for Clark, Kalispell, and Wakayakum counties. This one does have a priority service for people accessing life-sustaining medical appointments such as dialysis and cancer treatment, and when there's funds available, you can provide other trips such as shopping trips or other things like that. This one also requires that at least 2 days notice, booked out 14 days in advance, providing close to 6,000 trips in Clark County for 2020, and a little over 3,000 trips for Cowlitz. This one's funded through a little bit of a mixture of funds affected by some Washington State DOT funding, as well as some funding through C-Trans. Next slide, employment transportation. This program, next slide. This program is for Clark County only, and it's funded through Washington State Department of Transportation funding. This allows low-income residents access to employment, job training, interviews, job searches, and anything employment-related. This one does operate a little bit differently than the other transportation programs in that it's based on required referrals from our partner agencies. These partner agencies are places such as WorkSource or Clearview Employment, Good Little Job Connection, Partners in Careers, DSHS, and a few others. Primarily provided transportation through bus passes with some door-to-door on a limited basis. In addition to the bus passes, employment transportation has a bike to work component, and that's the program that are interested in combining either using their bike as a primary mode of transportation or interested in doing some combined bike and bus transportation. That one still has the same referral from one of the partner agencies, and we host those trainings and donate those bicycles to people from our office. Unfortunately, though, we have not had a bike to work class since 2019. Hoping, though, that we will have one this year. Next slide.
Hey, Michael, can I just pause for a second then? We have two Michaels present in our meeting, and Michael says, you had your hand up. Did you have a question that was timely to what he was talking about?
Yeah, so I was just wondering from the standpoint of, I think the previous slide showed that there's access to take individuals to specific places. One of the things that I was wondering about was access to bus routes, the airport, and light rail on the other side of the river, knowing that there's resources over there as well as on this side of the river. I just was wondering, is those also accessible as part of the as part of this program?
For which program?
The one that, I think it was the slide, that slide. So it was a reserve a ride type of scenario.
So reserve ride is a door-to-door program. So it's clients are picked up and delivered by a taxi service that we contract with.
Okay.
Michael, are there other transportation programs run by Community in Motion that will connect to other transportation hubs like the airport and light rail?
So we offer through the Medicaid transportation program and then as well as the employment transportation program, those do have, trips are provided or bus passes are provided, and those are done through the C-Trans or TriMet hop system. So anybody could take their monthly hop card and connect with a TriMet. I do believe that there is an additional charge where you would have to load a certain fare onto their card if they're going to be accessing light rail in Portland, so that there's not a charge to them.
One of the things that I think it's important to understand is that the funding for these programs require that the person who either starts or ends in Clark County or in the case of Collin County. So there's a sensitivity that we're not taking people out of Clark County and supporting TriNet program. But there is, through the volunteer program, there could be circumstances where the vehicle that was provided through a grant that a volunteer driver could take 5, 6, 7 people or more over to an event in Portland, or could take them to, let's say, a regional Special Olympics event or something along those kind of lines. And that's where I can see one of the most important things that our community can do for the individuals that depend on this is to get as many people as possible trained to be able to use the vehicle that Community in Motion has, that's Lyft equipped, to get people in those gap type of transportation.
All right, I think this is the last one that we have, the last program that we have. Sponsor Ride is a program, transportation program Community in Motion operates for Clark County, or individuals 55 and older or with a disability. Next slide. And this one is really meant to be kind of the last kind of catch-all for anybody not able to access any of the other programs. There is a small pot of money that can be used to transport people, but it's really designed to be a program funded by people's families to transport them wherever they need to go. If someone has it, someone that can provide some funds for an account for them, then you know that can be set up so that there's limitations on where they can go or how often they can go, and allow individuals to call in and maybe book their own rides if they need to go to a recreation activity or a grocery store or something along those lines. And we have used the funding in the past to pick up trips that weren't able to be picked up by the volunteer driver program or didn't quite meet all the qualifications for the employment program on, for the Reserve Ride program on a one-off basis. Next slide. Oh, I think this is the last slide. Transportation is the glue that holds the community together. Social and medical services are great, but for those with limited transportation options, those services are a bit out of reach. For most of us, transportation is an afterthought, and we're no longer able to transport ourselves or no longer have someone that can transport us. That was all I have. Does anybody have any other questions that I can help answer? Sorry, it was a lot of information to download all in a short period of time.
So, Michael, my name is Darla. Sorry, guys, I shouldn't be asking questions. But anyway, if you don't know which program would work, but we just call the transportation manager or ride manager, and they would help get somebody to the right program?
Yeah, so anybody that goes to our website, there's a services tab, and if you know which one, it will connect you with the phone number to contact. But in all honesty, if you don't know, there's a general phone number, and it's either Medicaid or the other programs are operated by the same couple of staff. So I can give you that phone number if you need it.
Thank you. That would be wonderful.
It is going to be 360-735-5736. That's the phone number for if you're trying to access non-Medicaid programs and you don't know which one, that's your best bet to call, and they will do some screening and figure out which program you qualify for. Anybody that qualifies for Medicaid can contact our main call center phone number, and that number is 360-694-9997.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm very happy that you're here to make this available to folks, Michael. I know you've been doing this for a very long time, and so one of the things that we all understand is how important transportation is, and the minor little gaps that occur between service coverage or hours of operation and those kinds of things, and especially for some of our clients or some of our constituents that go to work on odd hours that rely upon, let's say, CDAN as an example. The employment transportation can be that lifeline that can get them to and from work that I think that you will be a great resource for folks.
Perfect, yeah.
Thank you very much.
I have a question. So you didn't talk much about how the riders get back to their home. Could you explain a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, so just depending on the mode that clients travel, if it's a bus pass is either good for the whole month or for a whole day, so they can get back on the bus same as they got there. Gas vouchers are typically issued, round trip mileage reimbursements the same way. Our door-to-door trips are booked most likely round trip, unless it's specifically requested to be one way. And those round trips, those returns could be scheduled either as a set return time where you know what time you're going to be done, so you let us know and we can plan to have the driver back at that time. Or if not, the default was called a will call. And in those cases, the vendors have their drivers give that person a card with their phone number on it. Some of the vendors have people call the driver back directly. Some of them have the centralized dispatcher. And once that person calls and says, hey, I'm ready to go, that vendor will dispatch a driver back out to return them home.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that we've all been to the doctor and they're usually always running late in some way, so that explanation helps a lot.
Okay, are there any other questions before we move on to our second transportation team presentation? Thank you, Michael. That was good information to have. And now, Michael. Salas is going to talk about the Clark County Transportation System Plan.
Hang on just a second. I can actually close out.
Can you share?
I think so, Michael. You should be able to share your screen, or I can share it for you. But, oh, there you go. You got it.
This is what I'm going to talk about, and I'll try to be brief, partially. And Gary apologizes not being able to make it today. He's actually at a transportation conference in Olympia, and so he's the project manager for this project, and I'm just helping him. But a little bit about my background. I've done work for WashDOT up in Seattle. I worked on the hot lanes for SR-167. I also worked on the tunnel through downtown Seattle. And mostly all my work up there was environmental manager. So basically all the projects that come up, I help with the NEPA, SEPA, and permitting of those type of projects. So I've also done land planning as the land use director over in Eastern Washington and Lincoln County. And then I've done some work down in Texas for an engineering firm down there. So I have about 29 years of experience doing transportation mostly and land use planning. And so for Clark County, I do both. I work in the community planning office for land use, and also I do transportation planning in the public works office. So bear with me, we have like 42 slides to get through. I'll try to get through some of them. I might kind of skip over, only because even trying to explain them for me, it might be a little sketchy, but for the most part, you'll get the gist of what we're doing as far as the transportation system plan. Let's see if I can get this to work. So this is kind of our group right now, which Gary is, like I said, is the project manager. I worked with Gary on this, and here's some of the other people that that are working on the project as we speak. And this was work things that we had in place, you know, if we were doing a Microsoft Teams type of instruction type of thing. We don't need this information, so that's good. So basically, what we did is we took the transportation system plan and we used it as a guide to identify these particular plans that's in the county. So basically, we have the comprehensive plan, arterial atlas, capital facilities plan, transportation improvement program, bicycle and ped master plan, Clark County Code, pedestrian crossing treatment policy, school zone traffic control policy, and also standard details. We took all those pieces and came up with a transportation plan that would incorporate both the land use side of things along with the transportation side of things. Just a little bit more in the background, this kind of gives you a sense of size of Clark County and where we're at with regards to our population at this point, and it sort of supports why we're doing a transportation system plan and putting this in place. And this is more of a federal function of mileage that we have within the county, and you can see that we have roughly 1,100 miles sort of unincorporated urban areas, about the same for rural areas, and then a total unincorporated about 2,200 or so in area. This here gives you sort of a background on the direction that we're moving for the future. The ones on the left gives you a sense of 2015 and the age profile that we have. That age profile doesn't really change, but it grows exponentially within the county. By 2035, you can kind of see which direction we're going on both ends of the spectrum. This one tells us a little bit about our weekly trips, our weekday trips rather, and the one on the left kind of gives you a sense of the direction we're going based on, again, the growth that we have for the county. And the one on the right sort of definitely supports the same trends that we know that we're running into and where congestion is going to be more and more of an issue. This just tells you a little bit about where most of our traffic comes from and who's commuting, and obviously most of the commute is done by one single driver, and so it pretty much speaks for itself. This is one of those that I'm going to skip over because I was told to put it in there, but it's one of those where I think I understand it, but I don't want to say anything wrong. But from my understanding, it shows where congestion lies within the traffic areas, and you'll see at the bottom, it kind of shows you sort of the midnight, you know, time frame. Basically, it starts from midnight to midnight of specific areas and a time based on those time frames for a specific light, which is Northeast 78th Street. This
Michael,
here is more of the background.
Michael?
Michael,
I have a question.
Yes.
Could you share just a little bit about what this plan is, how it's developed, and what it's used for, just to give everybody kind of a context of all this information? Because this is great information, but that, I think that context would help.
Sure. So the Transportation System Plan was a plan that that is actually one that we voluntarily put together to deal with the issues of trying to prioritize transportation-related projects with the land use overlay. And in the past, they were kind of disconnected, where you'd have land use developments occurring on one side, and you'd have transportation developments occurring on the other side, and they weren't meshed. They weren't overlapping and having more of a collaborative effort moving forward. So Rob, who decided to look into it and figure out, okay, what's the best way to actually have that happen? Well, the comp plan is the main reason of being able to connect those two together. And this in particular becomes part of a comp plan. It becomes part of the transportation element of the comp plan later on once we actually have a final document. But the document takes in all those ones that I mentioned at the beginning. I'll go back to it real quick. All these plans that I mentioned at the beginning are meshed into the transportation system plan so that we can do just that, show that connection between the land use part of it and the transportation part of it, and better prioritize projects as we move forward on the transportation side so that there's a, more of a collaborative effort by both departments. Does that make better sense?
Thank you, yes.
So as we kind of go through this, and, you know, we know that that this is kind of a working document, per se. We're coming up with basically the standards that we need to move the document forward. But we know that there's going to be changes to the document as time goes on. But what we're coming up with, or what we've come up with, is definitely the set criteria that we'd like to put forward, so that we can get it in the direction that we need to go, before the comp plan update. Okay, so background was demographic trends and housing. These are things that we took, the emergency issues that are coming up, that we're tracking as things move forward. So obviously housing, which is an issue. We know economic trends affecting the region, as growth moves forward. We also look at, we coordinate with the Office of Financial Management, which is under GMA. And to help us look at the population and deal with it from a different perspective, as far as we move forward with forecasting, for, you know, 2022 and on, further on. We also have, coordination with local jurisdictions and cities, as well as the tribes. RTC is also one of those that we've, take into consideration a lot of their efforts as we move forward. And then 2025, the comprehensive plan updates as well. So here's how we're implementing the transportation system plan at this point. So transportation system plan, as you see it here in the middle, it does become part of the transportation element of the comp plan, as well as being able to incorporate the capital facilities plan, the TIP, which is transportation improvement plan, and implementation of other practices like ADA plan. This one just shows the goals and policies that we have, you know, a comparison of what where Clark County fits within the other areas within the county for some of the other agencies. So RTC, you know, they look at, you know, multimodal where they don't look at land use. WSDOT is the same way. Environmental is one of those that I think it overlaps with regards to showing not just land use, but sometimes you have parks involved and you have other multimodal issues that come up where environmental becomes one of those components that fits with them, within everything, so to speak. This was one of those, just kind of shows a comparison between what's going on with Clark County and other agencies. Transportation forecasting. So, this shows the consistency between land use and transportation. Like I mentioned earlier, planned land use must be reflected in trout forecasting. And then transportation improvements and implementation measures within the transportation elements must adequately support planned land use at adopted level of service standards. This here is just the cogwheel type of thing showing the transportation analysis of the performance measures that we put in for multimodal. And then we have solutions, funding strategies on one side of it, as well as community feedback and transportation system plan development on the other side. Also keep in mind, all these interactive maps and things, this slide deck is actually on our website. And you can go into it and it'll come up and everything. So, as well as the transition system plan is on there as well. So by, this here's a transportation project funding, with regards to when they're ranked. And so the first ranking that comes up, for the TIP or transition improvement plans deals with safety. The next one deals with land use. And mobility and multimodal and kind of goes from there. This slide that just shows through history, historically, what transportation projects were funded. In the middle ranking side of it, it shows you like the biggest issue with a lot of these areas is safety, both pedestrian, bike, as well as congestion-related issues. And then as it's gone on, they went from safety to land use. But they've been either one or two with regards to how they're ranked over the last 10 years. So this is the public involvement piece. This kind of gives you a sense of where we started. Our public participation plan was approved by the county council back in August of last year, and our first item that we wanted to do is put in the sounding board. And the sounding board is made up of folks from different other boards, the Neighborhood Association, as well as some of these others. We also went and did out on meetings in other places in the county, and that's where these dates you see on the back end, these are all the places we ended up going to speak to people about what we're doing in the transportation system plan. And there are you guys at the bottom. Planning board protocols, and this is mostly from the standpoint of we knew which direction we were going to, where we wanted to go with the transportation system plan, but we wanted a sounding board to identify not just issues that we thought were important, but issues that were important to the sounding board as well. And it's actually worked out really well because there's things that we didn't, not a ton, but a few things that we didn't take into consideration as we kind of went through things and what was important to folks and as opposed to what we've done in the past. And as we go through the slide deck, you'll see what sort of the outcome of what came out of the sounding board. So, Clark County, these are basically some of the, what I mentioned before, the sounding board members. These are all the areas where the sounding board members came from to join with, to give us feedback on the transportation system plan and the directions we were going.
Well, is that you? Was that the what you had signed up for? Is this that?
Yes, it is. And I participated on Zoom-type calls.
Yeah, great. And so I at the time, it was Gary and Max giving most of the speech, but I was in the background because I wrote the environmental chapter of the transition system plan, and I helped out with the DEI and EJ portions of the plan itself. And so a lot of it has more to do with the transportation planning part of it and very little to do with the environmental. But I did give a talk on the environmental section when it was my turn to speak about it. But most of the time, it was those guys giving the presentation and I was kind of in the background. So this basically, it just identifies there's six transportation related goals that the sounding board came up with, and you can see more of those goals and everything within the links identified on this page. These were some of the TSP final recommendations. Studying, research, analyze, and implement a multimodal level of service standards in urban or unincorporated Clark County. Implement bike and ped plan, recommended bicycle and sidewalk network. Institute a neighborhood traffic management program. Update transportation development code to improve safety and encourage more people to walk and bicycle. And continue current adopted processes to improve safety. So development of regional coordinated transportation system plan support, current practices that we do now as community framework plan policies and countywide planning policies with Clark County City. We coordinate with local, state, and regional organizations throughout the Southwest Washington and with the Regional Transportation Council and operate and maintain the regional communications network. So the sounding board feedback received was access to parks. And it was mostly from the standpoint of not only from an ADA perspective, but working with C-TRAN to provide access to parks within the county, identifying the maintenance of trails and those type of things, as well as identifying pedestrian versus bike paths and the use of those. Neighborhood transportation. And I think neighborhood transportation, it works in two ways. One, what we're looking at, and I'll just give you an example, is probably the best way to identify it, is what we have opportunities when a subdivision comes in and there's access to a main street where transportation like C-Tran or other services can get to, where like a bus stop, is that we would create a pathway as part of, sort of almost like an open space, as part of mitigation that you would put in place for people to access a bus stop or other transportation avenues outside of the subdivision itself, so that if it's a main road, main arterial, there's a way for people to get there instead of walking all the way around to the same source or the same area. And then regional transportation is definitely looking at both multimodal as well as other means of transportation. So some of the recommended solutions, continue collaboration with regional as well as local jurisdictions, and as well as the state and feds. Develop shared consistent methodologies. You know, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel or anything. A lot of the information that we already have is consistent with WSDOT as well as RTAC and other agencies as we move forward. Strengthen relationships, both in all, ideally on both sides of the river. There's a lot of things that that ODOT and Portland would like to coordinate on, especially with the third bridge coming up, although we're not talking about that, but it's still the relationships that we still are definitely those with throughout the area. And then maintain connectivity between land uses. And this goes back to the example that I gave for subdivision and
a
being able to incorporate sort of those transportation friendly access areas where people can access the bus stop or other means of transportation. So when we talk about multimodal, these are the things kind of what we're looking at from a transportation system perspective. And so it's county code requirements to construct sidewalks on both sides of a public street. And county sidewalks program can build sidewalks. Scoring criteria for new sidewalks. So, and when I talk about scoring criteria, we talk about looking at the height of a sidewalk, you know, if it should be 6 inches versus 8 inches, partially because it's, you know, for someone that has a sight disability, that becomes an obstacle potentially. And so we kind of think about those type of things in certain areas, as well as other ADA requirements that not only through our plan itself, but we incorporate those type of things throughout our transportation projects. The other is looking at countywide bicycle and pedestrian master plan, as well as existing funding, and looking at other funding for sure, coordinating with C-Tran and provide more or more consistent transportation services. And when we talk about micro-mobility forms of transportation, we're actually talking about e-bikes and e-scooters and keeping those in play because they're not going to go away anytime soon. And in fact, the trend is that it's increased. And then freight coordination, and that's working with the Port of Camas and Washougal along with Vancouver to provide access along the waterfront, as well as coordinating with them with regards to freight movement through county roads and facilities.
Michael, I have a question.
Yes.
So when you're talking about this micro-mobility, is that like where you see those scooters and then people can go use one of those scooters, go six blocks up the street, leave it, and then go about their business, and maybe they take a bus after that, or it's kind of in conjunction with other forms of transportation? Is that what you're talking about, micro-mobility?
Yes. And it's becoming more increasingly popular. And so we have to take it into consideration as much as we would for any other means of transportation. They're not licensed per se, but they go faster than what you can pedal. So then we want to make sure that we're capturing their usefulness. Did I answer your question?
Yes. Can you talk a little bit more, are there other forms of emerging technology related to transportation and the Clark County Transportation Plan?
Well, as we think about sort of other things, and we'll kind of talk about a few of these later. One is, using the light signals and actually having a network of with regards to light signals, as opposed to having something that's isolated. So you'd have like a signal on 78th Street that doesn't connect with the signal at 99th. And so it's having a network of those signals, which is part of something that we're working on now. The other things are, we know that more and more vehicles are turning to electric. I'm looking at getting an electric truck myself. there's that component to it. And then we didn't really go into this only because there's a lot of infrastructure that's needed to incorporate sort of autonomous vehicles. But, I think over time, and this is one of those things that we have it in the back of our mind, we know that this is a working document, we know it's going to probably come up in the future, but autonomous vehicles or autonomous type of structure that may be needed in the future is something that we've talked about. We haven't added that portion to this plan yet, but it is something that's in the back of our mind. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, recommended solutions. Studying research, analysis, and implementation of multimodal levels of service standards for urban unincorporated Clark County, improved coordination with airports and C-TRAN, implement bike and ped plan, and bicycle and sidewalk network, and then a network signage greatly enhances bikeway facilities. This one just kind of gives you a sense of some of the projects that are coming up. It's kind of hard to see, but there's these ones in red. I don't know, can you guys see my cursor?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So my cursor is identifying the red areas where they're looking at sidewalks and walkability, as well as the type of projects we're looking at in the unincorporated Clark County. The next one does the same thing, but it's for bikes, and it shows here in blue the bicycle, blue and in green. These are bicycle projects. These are planned projects here, and then they have some that are dark blue, which is, I'm sorry, it's difficult to see these, but there are some here that where my cursor is right here. These are projects that are underway, and then we have those that are sort of like green story type of projects, and then trail and pathway projects as well. So we're busy optimizing and preserving the investment and transportation system. So this goes back to what I was talking about as far as the traffic signals and integrating a network of traffic signals as opposed to having individual signals identified in a specific congestion. We can actually now map the county with regards to our traffic signals and be able to come up with a better way to prioritize where those changes should occur and where projects should occur as well. A road preservation program to identify existing roads that need to be maintained, and then residential street sweeping, those type of things that we'll continue to do. So sounding board feedback was received as doubling bikeways and sidewalks promotes active transportation. This encourages less driving, which could preserve the longevity of the current roads infrastructure. It continues to support the public works operations and preservation programs to provide the residents with quality infrastructure and analyze cost of maintaining roads with all new infrastructure built to determine if the current maintenance funding level is sustainable. So to ensure mobility throughout the transportation system, these are our current practices. We identify mobility. Mobility is measured by counting vehicle traffic. Mobility is also measured on urban collectors and arterials based on the volume to capacity ratio. We also do a non-motorized transportation modes are not measured for mobility. Mobility standards for local jurisdictions in Clark County vary, leading to inconsistency priorities for transportation projects. This is what we got from the Assembly Board, is congestion is not managed effectively. Congestion challenges occur where county roads intersect with state routes or state roads. Road space does not seem adequate or to accommodate people walking and bicycling. Traffic signals seem to provide varying levels of transportation or pedestrian service. C-Tram bus ridership and service route can be improved. Supportive of studying, researching, and analyzing the multimodal level of service standards, and supportive of TSP initiative recommendations shifting to multimodal level service standards that replace volume to capacity for street segments. Recommended solutions would implement a multimodal level of service standard to ensure mobility of all users. Institute a neighborhood traffic management plan. Build a pedestrian network as its own transportation system, not as a component of the street system. And that's really, I mean, it, that's one of our, one of my pet peeves, if anything, because we have so many developments going on everywhere that it would behoove us to not keep that in consideration, especially, you know, I have a kid that walks to school and or bikes to school, and I want to make sure that there's some consistency when it comes to those type of things, that we build those developments within Clark County. Establish communication with neighborhoods directly to engage support for new sidewalks on existing neighborhoods, and establish direct conversations with freight providers, possibly a freight advisory committee. So these are sort of the policies that we have in place now, and you can actually hit these buttons on the on our website, and they'll take you to those programs if you want to learn more about what those are. The other sounding board feedback received was sidewalks should be designed to be safe first and foremost. Pedestrians choose a safer path rather than a convenient path. And what I mean by that, there's times when, heck, I just had it happen the other day where a person comes out onto Highway 99 and instead of going up to the light, to cross over, they cross out right in the middle of the road, and you're, and part of it is, and from what I heard from the sounding board, is sometimes it's easier to get across in the middle of the, in the middle of that area than it is going to the stop sign or the stoplight, because of so much traffic that's there, and there's a lot of times they don't see you. So it's making sure that what we're putting in place keeps pedestrians not just safe, but for them to be able to access things a lot easier. Bikes and sidewalks create unsafe locations for pedestrians, as I just mentioned. Analyze crash data associated with pedestrians and the demographic data to find trends that would help prioritize sidewalk connections. Other recommended solutions was Clark County should monitor and evaluate sites where systemic safety treatments are implemented to measure and evaluate the effectiveness of the recommended treatments. Implement the school zone signing and pavement marking policy, and continue implementing pedestrian crossing prioritization program. Some of the report road concerns. This here is just something that my boss told me to make sure I put this up. So if you have anything that you have reports that you want to bring up, or if you need to talk to us about potholes or those type of things, or people speeding, here's that information. And I think that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Michael. That was a lot of information to absorb and digest. Sounds like you're working on getting us all in good hands. Or at least our feet are safe walking down the street. Any questions for Michael?
Yeah, Michael, this is Walt. If a person wanted to dive into some of these suggestions more in depth, a specific one that they're concerned about, and let's say I have a neighbor and I'm talking to them, what would be the best course of action for an individual to do to be able to drill down on, for example, the pedestrian safety issue? I mean, with all the roundabouts right now, it's very confusing, and especially if a person is visually impaired, it can be very difficult. What would you suggest that they do?
For sure, contact Public Works, and if it has to do with the transportation system plan itself, I would definitely go to the website. I would talk to Gary Albrecht about it. He's the project manager for it. You know, I can, if you have my number, is on the slide deck as well. You can definitely contact me, but I'll probably end up talking to Gary about it as well. So, but that's probably the best way to do it. And then, there's a lot of good people that, are with Public Works that can give even more information, than even Gary can. So, but, Cindy Gonzalez, for example, she does a lot of the outreach, along with Kayla, and I can't remember Kayla's last name, but she also does a lot of the outreach as well. But Cindy Gonzalez does have, Kaylee's number, and they work collaboratively to address some of those issues that the public may have.
And this is for the unincorporated portions of Clark County.
Yes.
Yeah. If a person is more concerned about something in Vancouver, Battleground, they would go to those jurisdictions, right?
That's correct.
Perfect.
Okay, and then we have a question here in the room from Bob.
Hi, first I'm speaking through this microphone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for this presentation. I was curious about the current practices that you mentioned. Mobility is measured by counting vehicle traffic. The question I had is, what would replace that? If you wanted to make a better estimate of pedestrian and bicycle usage?
That's a good question. I know that we have a new system being put in place. I couldn't tell you what the name of it is. But what it does, I know that it does connect all the signal lights with regard to the pedestrian, and it's there was a new instrumentation that was being put in place. You would I'd probably ask Gary more about it than myself, and it's mostly because it's out of my wheelhouse, obviously. I deal mostly from the environmental side of things, and Gary, along with it was Rob Kluge, but I think Rob left, and we now have a new transportation engineer, and I don't know her name, but Gary does know her. And just to let you guys know, I've been with the county for 2 years, and I've been in the office 3 months out of those 2 years. So I've been working from home ever since.
And Bob, we can follow up with Gary and get an answer to that question for you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, any other questions for the good of the order? I don't see any hands coming up. All right, thank you so much, Michael. That was the minute. It was a lot, and you got through it. Congratulations.
Yeah,
we should go for a bike ride or a walk or something now. It's still nice outside.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay, so on to our next agenda item, future meeting formats. And so this is a recurring theme in our meetings. Today is our inaugural hybrid board meeting where some of us are in the room together and some of you have joined us electronically. And so our other option would be just doing only Zoom or Microsoft Teams, it is, or I sincerely doubt that fully in person without a hybrid option is likely not.
That is actually not an option.
Yeah,
we've received recommendations from our prosecuting attorney that we must maintain a virtual option. So our options are either hybrid or virtual.
Yeah. And so, given our movement away from, but then maybe looping back to, COVID-19 restrictions and whatnot, does anybody have any burning needs to stay strictly Zoom, or can we continue in this hybrid format? Those are the two kind of choices we're talking about. What do you think?
Well, as a person that currently is getting over COVID, I appreciate the fact that I've been, but I do anticipate that once I'm completely well, that I would participate in the occasional face-to-face. Mm-hmm. But I think the hybrid is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with that, and I would say, especially this time of year, when it's easier to get out and, you know, join maybe a meeting that's in person versus I can see where there might be a decline in service participation in the dead of winter when nobody wants to be outside for anything. And so what I'm proposing is that we want to, or it sounds like we want to stay hybrid. Lori, did you have something to add about that?
Yeah, I think it's also for working parents, you know, it's a bit difficult sometimes to, you know, get done with work if you have children to transport and then, you know, hurry up and then get back downtown. So one of the reasons why this evening was much more convenient for me to do by Zoom is because I have that kind of situation. And so in order to not only recruit but retain people who might be, you know, caregiving or you know, either if it's child care, elder care, whatever it is, having a hybrid option, I think, is a good idea.
So do we need to have that motion?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there is a comment in the chat from Lindy, and she says, I will never have a burning desire to be in person over virtual, but if it's between virtual and hybrid, I don't have a preference. And yes, do you want to take a motion just to make it official?
Okay, so since this is an action item on our agenda, do I hear any motion to meet? What I mean for that, maybe.
This is Leanne.
I move to have a hybrid and
virtual option for meetings. Okay.
In person with virtual option. Okay. I second. All right. Thank you all. Thank you, Leanne. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. All right. Trisha's doing a wonderful job of keeping this, like, connected and with the slideshows and all that stuff, too, so she'll be a virtuoso. next item, Darla, do you have a brief legislative update for us?
I do, and I'm juggling puppies as I speak, so please excuse my non-professionalism. But puppy care is taking preference right here. So, March 10th was the last day of legislation, and we were enormously successful this year, especially for it being a supplemental session. And a big reason for that is before the session started, we, the DDC, the Developmental Disabilities Council, had that large group of self-advocates, parents, and professionals, anyone who was interested, joined the North Star, and we met all year long. And so we were really able to go to the legislature with a solid voice and a solid front. One of the most important outcomes of the North Star advocacy was to finally see the legislature create a DD caucus. And this is a caucus that has bipartisan legislators who can help with issues on either side. And we really look forward to working with them in the future. The governor's budget came out first. Of course, it had all kinds of great stuff in it. The governor really wanted to transform the DD system. When we got through legislative sessions, that didn't happen. But what did get funded in the governor's budget, while we didn't get caseload forecasting funded, we did get the funds to hire two additional people to be on the caseload forecast so that they can start collecting the data to back up the request for us to have caseload forecasting for our DD clientele moving forward. And I'm going to flip over to this page because it talks about it being so easier. Community residential providers received a 23% rate increase across the board. It really was dependent upon what level of care the individuals they were caring for qualified under as well. They funded, as I said, two case managers to review and maintain the no-pay services caseload. We're very excited about that. That is something that we lost during it was like 2008, 2009, we lost our no-pay services case managers. And so individuals who were not receiving a paid service was just kind of lost on a wait list. Now they'll actually have a case manager to connect with them. Come on, guys. We got past House Bill 1980, which allowed both employment and community inclusion services to actually happen at the same time. That's also something that we used to have prior to the 2008-2009 economic downturn. And as a cost-saving measure during that time, they actually said that people had to choose. Now individuals will be able to have both of those services. Community support for children. They added 2 3-bed homes for intensive habilitation services and 6 3-bed homes to enhance out-of-home services for youth 8 to 21. The home and community-based services provide development increase rates for enhanced respite services for children and overnight planned respite for adults. There is a grant through the healthcare authority to plan for short-term residential crisis. And youth inpatient navigators through Seattle Children's Hospital and home and community, healthcare authority, sorry, to identify temporary alternative services for kids needing care. There was an increase to personal needs allowance for individuals living in IDD, in their own homes or in part or in parity with other residential settings, so that's huge. And they expanded the enhanced case management, so that's those case managers who have a much smaller caseload. You know, most of our case managers have these huge caseloads, and it's hard for them to actually get out and provide the services and support to individuals that's needed, equitable to everybody. So individuals who need a much higher or lower client-to-case manager ratio, that has been, we have more of those individuals. So we've gone from being able to have 700 of those to 1,500. That's something that we're very excited about. Transition care management, to hire 35 full-time FTEs to coordinate transition for clients moving from one care setting to a new one. That's new and great information that we'll be getting. And then benefits plan and contract with an organization that trains attorneys and professionals to assist people with IDD to access and retain benefits. Those were all within the DDA budget. And then throughout the rest of the budget, the healthcare authority saw an increase to the children's services, the Washington State Developmental Disabilities Council is partnering with racially diverse communities to build capacity of a coalition of IDD self-advocates and advocates. The Office of Superintendent will support meaningful, equitable access for public school students, including special education, and their family members who have language access barriers. by starting language access programs in school districts. The military department will fund 2 staff for emergency management for human services, support for people with access and functional care needs in a disaster response. And then Division of Vocational Rehab got funding to provide school-to-work services in every single county. That is a service that was available in some counties, such as King County. I think maybe Pierce County had it. And it worked beautifully in those counties that had it, but it wasn't equitable across the state. So now we're going to have that available in every county. And then there was a bunch of policy bills. So those were all in the budget. And then the policy bills that passed, and as you know, in a supplemental budget, if a bill starts in the first year of a biennial session and it doesn't pass, it can get carried over to the supplemental year, right? And so some of these were carried over. So some of the notable things for there is that they're eliminating the IQ score for eligibility for DDA services. That is huge because a lot of our individuals individuals really don't qualify under the IQ score, even though they might need the assistance that DDA has to offer. And so this really is just acknowledging that. It also, because schools don't always do IQ scores any longer, it really has become a barrier for families, especially for barriers of families with access issues, because IQ testing is really was normed and created for individuals who speak English. It has not been normed for other languages. That's my understanding. We talked about the no-pay services caseload. There's an increase to language access in public schools. We talked about that. Students can now have excused absences for mental health days. I think that's huge. We talked about school services. They want to repeal the sub-minimum wage certificate. And I don't have a lot of information about that. Trish, do you have any more information on that?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The repeal of sub-minimum wage certificate.
Just that it's going forward and that DDA is working on it. In Clark County, we did not have any of those sub-minimum wage certificates. So for us, you know, I'll have to say we probably have not been tracking it as closely. You know, one of the things that I will say about that is that, you know, in the rest of the state, it seemed like perhaps it might have been a more controversial issue. We got a lot of questions this year when the advisory board members were meeting with legislators about that and kind of like, so how'd that go here? What do you think? Is it a problem or are you okay with it? And we were, you know, I think the advisory board said, no, this is great. We think everybody should make minimum wage or better. And yeah, so that's where they're, where DDA is at with it. They have hired somebody, so there's somebody that is actually, that's their job to help people to get transitioned into supported employment or other opportunities that where they could earn minimum wage or better.
Okay, thank you. There was a bill that went through that exempt license plates so that they may be blocked by wheelchair carriers or a wheelchair lift on vehicles. Stipends for state workers. So a lot of us will participate on state work groups, and we're all paid. But the self-advocates or oftentimes individuals from underrepresented groups or low-income people are there on their own dime. So they actually passed some funding to allow $200 a day for individuals to participate in those work groups. Housing opportunities, there was an advisory committee to maximize creation of housing for people with disabilities statewide. Supported living housing for people in community support services and medical assistance programs. And then a bill to continue to work on that Ruckel House was stuff that happened several years ago around the transformation services. So continuing to work on transforming services for people with CD in community, residential, redesign, and to redesign the institutions here in Washington State. I mean, all of that for a year, you know, supplemental budgets, typically you don't get any new funds, right? You're just working on policy bills. So to get that much new funding and that many policy bills, and to get a bipartisan caucus committee absolutely focused on IDD issues, all of those things are just huge wins for this legislative session. Having done this for a really long time, you know, typically I'm coming to you guys with sad stories or funny anecdotes, but not a lot of wins. And this year there was a ton of wins. Not everything we wanted, but a lot more than I expected us to get. And so very excited about that. And I have sent Trish the bills of interest that finally, the final passage of that and of the budget. So any questions?
Darla, I'm sorry if I missed it, but did you talk about the employment services, rate study, and so on?
I did not talk about the rate study. So, Trish, you can talk about the rate study. I do want to say we were talking with Debbie Roberts, who's the head of DDA, and Secretary of DSHS on Monday, and they were saying that DDA has 19 reports out of this session that they have to report back to the legislature. And so I was just like, wow, central office is going to be busy. And so that rate study and those reports is going to be part of that. Do you want to talk about that, Trish?
Sure, I can talk a little bit about it. So one of the things that went forward, there was a bill to increase the rate of that's paid to the providers for supported employment services. And the rate did not go forward, but out of that bill came a rate study. So currently there is a DDA is running a rate study. They've convened a group of stakeholders to participate in that. And it has a pretty short timeline. I think that they've got to get it, you know, wrapped up. I think like maybe even like within the next couple of months or something. I mean, it's a pretty short timeline. A couple of other things that I wanted to say is that a dual services bill. Did you talk about that, Darla? I'm sorry. You did?
Yeah.
Okay. And then statewide school to work?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I can forward my report to you guys as well. I'm sorry for doing double duty here. These guys have sat through enough meetings today that they're kind of done.
We have the bills of interest. We've began posting the materials on our website in advance of the meeting, and it will continue to live there. So if anybody wants to go to the website, they can get that information too.
And you can always give me a call.
All right. Thank you, Darla. It has been a long meeting. We're finished our last agenda item. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Hearing nothing, seeing nothing, I do declare this meeting is adjourned. So thank you for your participation, your patience with a little bit of technology, but I think it worked okay. See you in a couple months.
Bye.
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 Nice to meet
everyone.
Hi, everybody. Thank you.
Bye. Nice to meet you, Michael.
Okay.
Mic is off.
We are still live, just so you know, and they can still hear us. So, oh, and I'm going to stop our recording.